It's all Greek to me, or maybe French, on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Martin Wells is here to tell us how writing moves from one language to another on Scribble.
Marty, how in the world did you end up with a translation business?
Well, what had happened was my wife is a tax accountant. She's been a tax accountant for the past million years. And she also does small business advising. And she had been doing the business taxes for a local established translation business. And so she knew the numbers inside and out, and the lady who had started the business decided to sell it, and so we decided to buy it.
Well, what do you do for translators?
we find all of our translators locally.
Really?
Yes.
In all languages?
In all the languages we need. Not only do we have you've got document translation, which we can do any language.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have on-site interpreters, which are all local. Thanks to the internet, we can do document translation,
explain.
Any language. Okay. Translators can make a lot of money, document translators, because there are basically three types or three levels of translation. There's the basic level or user level. So the person just has to be skilled in everyday speech. The next would be semi-technical. If there was a business that wanted to make a flyer that was directed towards, let's say, a marketing, the people in marketing in a different country, those people would have a certain level of vocabulary that the normal person wouldn't have. So that would be level two. Level three would be a scientific or engineering level, where not only does the person have to be proficient in the language, they need to know the subject matter well enough to talk to other people who have higher levels of education. So as a result, and the way that translators generally charge, if it's a large document, they will actually charge by word.
Wow.
Yes. So you figure, let's just say Spanish. Spanish, level one, nickel a word. Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound like much, but, you know, and generally if it's a small document, they'll charge so much per page. Level two, that would probably be about 15 cents. And level three, you get into engineering or medical terminology or legal terminology. That could be anywhere from 25 to 30 cents a word.
That takes me back to the early days of authors, you know, writing
right.
for mystery magazines. You pay so much per word.
3 cents a word, 2 cents a word, depending on the magazine.
Yeah, I didn't know that kind of payment system persisted. But that
is it in the old language or the language to which it's being translated?
Oh, well, I mean, they can go either way. And see, that's what my job is. I find people with the correct skill sets.
Okay.
How do you do that?
Thanks to the internet. I have different resources where I can go on there and find people that do this.
It's amazing what the internet enables you to do in business, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. And, you know, the interesting thing about that is one of the first times we used the internet to find someone for a specific task, a crime was committed in Rock Island. And the detectives needed an interpreter. Well, that's fine. We sent them an interpreter. But now they had a four-hour-long interrogation that was on – it was recorded on, well, CD, DVD. But now that needs to be translated and documented so that it can be submitted into court records. So since it was – the entire interrogation was done in Spanish, now we have to translate that into a hard document. Well, my interpreter is very good, but she's not necessarily good at transcription. So we found someone in Argentina that was able, and that was her job. And apparently in Argentina, I didn't realize this, but notary publics in different countries, they have a higher status.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And, you know, I was surprised at that. But she was a notary public and made very, you know, she wanted to point that out. I'm like, okay. Yeah. You know, and my experience with notary publics has always been, well, you know, I need to get
it. Yeah, bring it in, stamp it, sign it, that's it.
Yeah. But she had experience in transcription like that.
I notice in Italian crime series that they have on television, the notary is a very important person.
Right.
Key figure in the whole operation. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was surprised at that.
So who are your clients in the Quad Cities?
All hospitals, doctor's offices, courts.
Mm-hmm. And what about businesses like John Deere, or would they tend to have their own?
They generally – larger businesses like that generally have their own. There have been some smaller businesses that because they want to reach out to different groups within the Quad Cities, they've brought in some, you know, smaller documentation for us to translate. But our bread and butter, for the most part, is on-site interpretation.
You know, we've talked about poetry. That poetry is what is lost in translation. But it's not only that, but idioms. Idioms change from language to language.
Yes.
And idiomatic speech is very difficult to deal with. So you have to have someone who is well-versed in a language.
Well, exactly. I mean, you would think, if you're fluent in the language, you have to know the culture. And that's why it is so important that all of our interpreters – are not just proficient in language, but they know the culture. For example, I interviewed someone who had graduated from St. Ambrose with a master's degree in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
She was as white bread as you can imagine. She knew of the culture, but she didn't grow up and live in the culture. So it was a problem. It was a problem for her. And it was a problem because the people she went to interpret for didn't trust her. And I could understand that. That would be like if I was fluent in Swahili, mm-hmm. and I went to, let's say, for an operation or a doctor's consultation, the patient who spoke Swahili may not trust me, and as a result, they clam up.
You know, when you talk about making documents, what happens when you get into different alphabets like Greek and or Arabic or Chinese? Have you ever had to deal with something like that?
We've dealt with Arabic, yes.
Uh-huh.
But it's never a problem because the people we contract to do the translation for us, they've dealt with that before.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm sure – and, you know, a lot of these people, that's the one thing that's great about the internet. These people could be anywhere. They could be based anywhere in the world. And this is how they make their livings. You know, and there are a lot of especially very technical document translators. They might be a doctor, you know, and they just do this as a sideline.
I just happened to see a picture recently of a Chinese typewriter, and I could not imagine that such a thing existed. But apparently the keys are certain strokes, and there's a way of combining them to make the ideographs.
Mm-hmm.
So moving from language to language is intricate. It is...
Absolutely. It's like the old game of spoons, uh-huh. where you would tell a secret to someone, and then they say the secret to the next person, and then it goes around the room, and then by the time it gets back to you, it's totally different. It's mm-hmm. totally different.
Do you ever translate the other way from English to, let's say someone has a great-grandparent back in Greece and
yes.
wants to write a letter?
Yes.
And you can do that too?
Yes. We can – I don't personally do this.
No.
I find people, yes. I would find the people to do this.
Do people come to you or do you go scouting for them?
As far as interpreters and translators?
Yeah.
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. A lot of times we'll have family members that will come in and they'll say, I just had someone who moved here. I'll give you an example. A mother-in-law had come in. Her son-in-law was from Kazakhstan. And he was looking for an engineering job in the Quad Cities. Well, while he was, you know, looking for that engineering job, he was looking for other sources of income. And so we will get people that want to do this, you know, part-time. And it's great for someone who's you know, wants to get some additional money flowing in. Now, granted, our volume isn't such that they can make a living off of this.
Not because Kazakhstan, I wouldn't
no.
think.
No. But we were able to find him some projects and things mm-hmm. to work on. And then, you know, then word spreads also.
Yeah.
Could you also provide a translator for someone who wants to give a local talk in another language?
Depending on the language, yes. Our four top requested languages in the Quad Cities, Spanish, which shouldn't be a surprise.
Right.
Burmese.
No kidding.
Well, that's the... World Relief settles Burmese because somehow the government has decided that this is the area where Burmese should go. So for the past probably 7 or 8 years,
yeah.
nearly all the refugees that we've settled, at least in Rock Island, have been refugees
yes.
from Burma.
And the first indication we get that there is a migration like that, we'll get a call from one of the emergency rooms. Requesting a certain language. It's like, oh, well. So we found Burmese interpreters.
Well, can you?
Wait a minute, don't stop. Spanish, Burmese.
Spanish, Burmese, Vietnamese, mm-hmm. and French.
Huh. Why
and
French?
French is mostly from African countries.
Right.
Yes,
right.
And that is another area where... You have to think of the cultures. You know, one thing I didn't realize with Spanish, I thought Spanish was Spanish was Spanish before I got into this business. But people from Mexico don't like people from Spain.
No.
And you know, vice versa.
And South American people from Peru do not like people from Mexico.
Yes. And this was a total surprise to me. But the cultural differences... So, you know, a lot of times we have to tweak which Spanish interpreter we send where.
So, I mean, are these people on call locally or?
They're on call locally. They can refuse to go. We provide service 24/7. So we will get a request that comes into our office, and then it's up to us to find the interpreter.
Well, that's you're round the clock then, huh?
Yes. Yes.
Yeah, you know, we don't we get absorbed in our own language, and we forget other languages have their great strengths and beauties, and other cultures have approaches and ways of saying things that strike us as odd. And if you translate an idiomatic phrase straight,
yes,
it doesn't make sense at all.
Yes.
And so you have to be creative in some instances, don't you?
Yes. Yes. And, well, and once again, we consider our target audience. One of the things, and this is why it's so important for hospitals, and I will say primarily hospitals and doctor's offices, to make use of an interpreter and not rely on a family member.
Yeah.
Because you might get a case where a family member, number one, doesn't understand what the doctor or nurse is saying and will put it into, you know, terminology that may not be correct, or they might edit out things that maybe they don't want grandma to know that she's got this condition. So they just won't interpret it.
Hmm. Yeah, that's true. A lot of self-censorship goes in.
Oh, exactly.
Communication.
Exactly. And, you know, and that's the other thing. All of our interpreters have, you know, they have a basic knowledge of medical terminology. But you don't want to interpret that directly, because now you need someone to interpret the medical terminology in that language to the person, to basic language. So they have to do it on the fly. And we have one interpreter. It's amazing. I'm sure you've seen this in maybe they've got something like this at the Chicago Museum of Science and Industry. But it's the thing where you go up and there's a telephone and you put the telephone to your ear and you start talking and it delays your speech like 3 seconds. So you hear what you're saying through the earpiece 3 seconds later, and you get
– right.
You can't go 10 seconds without having to stop. She translates on the fly. So a doctor would be talking, and we always encourage the doctors and nurses, whoever they are, to speak directly to the patient. They have a tendency to speak to the interpreter, but that's not what we want. We want them to be talking – to the patient and for the interpreter to be sort of transparent.
Mm-hmm.
So that the doctor, yes, he's speaking in a different language, but the patient hears what the doctor is saying as it's translated. But she was amazing. I don't know how she did it.
Yeah. Do you have any kind of a permanent staff or office, or are you just
– No, we haven't. We have an office, but our permanent staff are – appointment coordinators.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Are you ever asked to translate a literary work, a short story or something like that?
As of yet, no. Okay. It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, I guess that's a more specialized category. Publishers would hang on to those.
Yes.
And any work at the school systems, there's so many there. At Rocky, there was 30-some different languages.
Yes.
Going on.
We have had some items. But see, then, you know, that's once again, I'm not doing my job to convince some of the local school systems. You should have somebody professional doing this because they'll just find somebody.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because, number one, it's quicker.
Right.
And probably cheaper because this person will just do it. This person's mom will just do it for us, you know, and it's okay.
I know there are some people who are teaching English to a classroom of 18 different languages.
Right.
And it's more a job of acting than anything else, and try to convey what a word means or what a phrase means and so on. I've talked to some people who've been in that profession, and it's very interesting. And English is such a difficult language. If it isn't your native language, you're going to have trouble. Lots of trouble. So, well, Martin, I must say, that is impressive. And who knew this was going on right here in the good old QCA? Thank you very much, and we wish you the very best in continuing your translation work. And as the world comes closer and closer together, more and more translators are needed. Martin Wells, thanks. Who would have thought that Marty Wells would have such a thriving and busy occupation?
Yeah, I thought the need for that, as English becomes more and more common, it would disappear. But apparently,
oh no,
the need for translation. I hadn't even given a thought, of course, to emergency rooms and doctors' offices. And
yeah, that's
and,
true.
And the tremendous, we have a huge refugee population. Many different languages. I think Rocky teaches or has students that speak over 30-some languages.
Mm-hmm. And it takes a while to become acclimated to English, although I must say I've spoken at some ceremonies where people were granted citizenship. And what impresses me is what those people go through. They are better informed citizens than most native-born Americans.
Well, they've read parts of the Constitution, for one thing.
They've not only read it, they've studied it.
Right.
They know it. They've been tested. And I think, I wish everyone
right.
had to go through this, because they're impressive. And they're people that you're happy to have in the country.
Right.
They really are. They want to be here. And I think, boy, the daunting task of being able to read English and so on, which is a requirement. Man, that's tough. Anyway, a book I've written about, Steven Pinker's Enlightenment Now. This is chapter 2 in his earlier book, which is as thick as this, The Better Angels of Our Nature. This is subtitled The Case for Reason, Science, Humanism, and Progress. This builds on what he maintained in his first book, that the world has become more peaceful. And you read the newspapers and you think, how can that be? We forget that news is news because it's exceptional.
Right.
It's different. If the good news were that there were no killings today and there was peace, that would be bad.
Right.
So the fact that we read about this and people harp on it all the time, we overlook the fact.
Well, apparently, statistically, the world is getting better, is getting more peaceful. People are getting less and less violent.
Yeah, and one of the big things is human life is more valued now than it was in the past.
Which I suppose is why there's news about when it goes askew.
That's right. But it's in this one he has, I counted 75 different graphs, only two of which show something that's unfortunate, the rise in death from drug overdoses and so on. And, of course, the increasing problem with our environment. But otherwise, it's impressive. Admittedly, the statistics only go to 2015, but the trend is unmistakable all the way through. It's quite an interesting book to read. What he wants to do here is make a stronger case for reason, science, and humanism to get away from the things that divide us. We differ over culture, over religion, over politics. And, he says, can't we just get past that?
Does he think we ever will?
He thinks we are in danger of sliding back all across the world as we're moving to more autocratic societies. And that is alarming. That really is. One-man rule is bad. Democracy is messy, but it's better than one-man rule.
So does he have a solution?
Not really. He's describing. He makes a plea for humanism at the end. Forget all those other things and just deal with people as human beings. And it'll be simpler to do that. But anyway, Enlightenment Now by Steven Pinker. Big book, but it's easy to read. you have anything?
Well, it fits in with a book that Katie Kiley just gave me a week ago, and it's a book I ordinarily would never have read, but if Katie Kiley says read it, I read it. And I wouldn't read it normally because it's a historical novel, and I just don't like historical novels. But this is a book called The Secret Chord by Geraldine Brooks, who's a Pulitzer Prize winner. And it's the story of how King David comes to power, from his shepherd days when he killed Goliath to standing up to Saul to becoming king and so forth. And we tend to forget because we read the nice Sunday school stories about King David and Bathsheba and all of that without realizing that this is 1,000 years BCE that David takes place. And it's an Iron Age, and these primitive tribes, the 12 tribes of Israel, still have no sense of a community, and how David manages to solidify them into a. But you speak of violence, you wouldn't want to be alive during this novel. The chances are you wouldn't be alive very long, because the amount of killing and taking from it turns out that Nathan, who becomes the prophet that guides David through his career to become king, was a small child, and David and his band of outlaws, when they were running from Saul, needed food, so they went into a village and killed everybody there, including the parents of Nathan, in front of Nathan, and almost killed Nathan, except that David said, well, let's take him. And that was par for the course.
That's right. True. And
then surrounding all these 12 tribes of Israel are all the enemies, the Philistines, the Moabites, and everyone else. There's a lot of bloodshed in this book.
It was customary not just to kill the men, but the women. You might rape the women first.
Right.
And kill all the children.
Right.
I mean, genocide was a way of life. And that lasted for a long, long time. Homo sapiens ought to be called Homo furens or something, because we did a lot more killing than thinking. It's just an amazing.
So Pinker has a point, I think.
Yeah, he does. So what is that novel again?
The Secret Chord by Geraldine Brooks.
Mm-hmm. And we can thank Katie Kiley for that. We get Katie Kiley has many friends. I didn't realize she had many books as well.
The only people who pledged during Saturday Morning Live last week were Katie Kiley's friends.
Well, we had a couple. We had our seven, but her friends really swelled the pot. Okay, well, that will just about do it for this week. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We thank you very much for tuning in, and we'll be back next week with more as we head toward April and Poetry Month. See you next week on Scribble.